This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
I'm Renee Montaigne, and this may be the most iconic voice in the history of broadcast news.
This is London, and the Allied rear guard is still holding Dunkirk against increasing German pressure. Heavy German field guns are pounding the beaches.
Edward R. Murrow brought World War II into America's living rooms. Years later, the celebrity broadcaster gave listeners a liberator's eye view of the horrors of Buchenwald with the words, "I was the least important person there, as you shall hear."
After the war, Ed Murrow and his team of reporters brought news to the new medium of television. On his CBS program See It Now, Murrow took on Senator Joseph McCarthy and the House Un-American Activities Committee in the 1950s. Murrow won that fight. Off the air, he fought with CBS founder William Paley about the rise of primetime entertainment programming and the displacement of his hard-hitting news shows. That was a fight Murrow would lose.
NPR's Bob Edwards is out with a new book, Edward R. Murrow and the Birth of Broadcast Journalism. In Bob's office, you'll always find a photograph of Murrow on the wall, strategically positioned so Bob himself doesn't see it while he's writing.
No, I wouldn't want that. The intimidation, is, oh my God, he wouldn't write it this way. No.
Bob says Ed Murrow never forgot where he came from, the logging camps of the Pacific Northwest, even as he headed for his first journalism assignment in London.
He brought with him his working class background, and when he first got to London, I think he was a kind of a reverse snob against the English class system. By the end of his time in London, he'd just grown to love all of England and what it did to stand up to Hitler. But he had a little chip on his shoulder when he first got there, and you get this from him. "We looked in on a renowned Mayfair hotel tonight and found many old dowagers and retired colonels settling back on the overstuffed settees in the lobby. It was not the sort of protection I'd seek from a direct hit from a half-ton bomb, but if you were a retired colonel and his lady, you might feel that the risk was worth it, because you would at least be bombed with the right sort of people."
Of course, his reports, the ones that are utterly, utterly legendary, are his reports from the Blitz in London on a rooftop sometimes, and always with sound, of course, because he was standing right there and you could hear the bombs going off.
Yeah, the first one he did, he felt, I think, almost disappointed because all hell was breaking loose just minutes before he went on the air. And remember, this was live, so he had to take what was going on at the time New York threw him the signal.
"I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London. At the moment, everything is quiet. For reasons of national as well as personal security, I am unable to tell you the exact location from which I'm speaking. Off to my left, far away in the distance, I can see just that faint, red, angry snap of anti-aircraft bursts against the steel blue sky. But the guns are so far away that it's impossible to hear them from this location. About 5 minutes ago, the guns in the immediate vicinity were working. I can look across just at a building not far away and see something that looks like a splash of white paint down the side. And I know from daylight observation that about a quarter of that building has disappeared, hit by a bomb the other night."
He had notes that he had made from, he'd say things like, "and I can tell you from daylight observation that," so that's when he was reading from his notes. But the rest of it, he's just describing what he sees. Two searchlights reach up into a three-quarter moon or something like that. He was magnificent with word pictures. And then down on the ground, this is what I love about him. He's such a fine writer, and he would talk about what he saw in the streets. Wait a minute, let me find. Okay. In one window, or what used to be a window, was a sign. It read, "Shattered, but not shuttered." Nearby was another shop displaying a crudely lettered sign reading, "Knocked, but not locked." They were both doing business in the open air. Halfway down the block, there was a desk on the sidewalk. A man sat behind it with a pile of notes at his elbow. He was paying off the staff of the store that stood there yesterday. God, I love that.
How much influence did Edward R. Murrow have on how people in America experienced World War II?
Well, it started in 1938, as far as Hitler moving into Austria. And the United States didn't get involved till December 1941. So for all that time, people in America thought it was Europe's problem. They should deal with it. We shouldn't get involved. And they were isolationists. Churchill loved what Murrow was doing because he was bringing the war into the living rooms of America, showing you in great detail what England was going through and standing up to Hitler.
In the book, you have a transcription of one of the more astonishing reports that Edward R. Murrow gave during World War II. He took a number of flights, combat missions over Berlin.
He had 15 combat missions in World War II and another 10 in Korea, even though his superiors in New York told him not to do that. And he always said, well, okay, sure, I won't do that. And then he would go out. But he was a reporter. He wanted to go out and get the story. He, in one particular mission, did such a fabulous broadcast. And this is, again, after he got back home.
D-Dog was corkscrewing. As we rolled down on the other side, I began to see what was happening to Berlin. The clouds were gone, and the sticks of incendiaries from the preceding waves made the place look like a badly laid-out city with the streetlights on. The small incendiaries were going down like a fistful of white rice thrown on a piece of black velvet. As Jock hauled the dog up again, I was thrown to the other side of the cockpit, and there below were more incendiaries, glowing white and then turning red. The cookies, the 4,000-pound high explosives, were bursting below like great sunflowers gone mad.
The dog refers to the code name D-Dog. That was the mission's code name. That broadcast won him his first Peabody Award.
Bob, everyone always talks about your conversations with Red Barber. Do you have a favorite moment or period of time with Edward R. Murrow that's just perfect for you?
I would be hard-pressed to choose between what he did during the Blitz and Buchenwald. Such a vivid description of what I'm sure I would have found impossible to describe. And standing up to McCarthy, because that took a different kind of guts. And the courage to go up against his bosses. And he did, and he paid the price. The man had guts. He just had no fear of anything or anybody.
Bob, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Our own Mr. Edwards begins a book tour this week for Edward R. Murrow and the Birth of Broadcast Journalism. A longer version of my interview with Bob and some of Edward R. Murrow's broadcasts are at npr.org.
We proclaim ourselves, as indeed we are, the defenders of freedom wherever it continues to exist in the world. But we cannot defend freedom abroad by deserting it at home. The actions of the junior senator from Wisconsin have caused alarm and dismay amongst our allies abroad and given considerable comfort to our enemies. And whose fault is that? Not really his. He didn't create this situation of fear. He merely exploited it, and rather successfully. Cassius was right. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Good night, and good luck.